Okay, everyone. So as we've just passed the holiday of Purim, Jewish moms have now basically started to freak out about Pesach because now, as is the way the calendar works, 30 days after Purim is Pesach, and people love cooking and cleaning way before. There's something about Purim that just like turns off the switch for people about Pesach. So the question is there more of a connection between Purim and Pesach besides just the switch that turns off because it's 30 days before?
Yeah. I was just talking to my friends about this.
That you think there is?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you'll suggest it at the end, see if I covered it. If I didn't, you're up. Okay, so the first one, first thing that we'll basically say is the redemptions of Purim and Pesach basically could not be more different. Because on Pesach, the Jewish people are totally passive. Hashem's name is, Moshe's name is not even mentioned in the Haggadah, except for one time on Pesach where we mention Moshe's name, but in passing, Moshe's name is like totally not even mentioned. Whereas on Purim, it's the exact opposite, where the role of Hashem is so hidden that we don't mention his name in the Megillah at all. He's so much behind the scenes. Yeah.
Well, the Haggadah wasn't made by someone. It wasn't made by like a biblical figure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's made by some.
Yeah, but the whole point of the Haggadah is that the Jewish people were so passive that it had nothing to do with them that we almost purposely omit them from the story because we're so worried that someone should look at this redemption story and say, oh, it was because of Moshe, it was because of this person, when really we're attributing it almost solely to Hashem. So because we're solely attributing it to Hashem, the Jewish role was so insignificant in that piece that we have to say that. Yeah? Okay. Good? Yes? Yeah.
Also, isn't it in the Haggadah literally, I will liberate the people of Egypt?
Correct. Yes. So that's even more so showing. So there's two things. It says ani v'lo malach, I am no angel. Ani v'lo saraf, I'm me and no fiery serpent angel. Ani v'lo hashaliach, me and not the messenger. So now who is the messenger? Moshe. Also, if you take the acronym of Malach, Saraf, and Hashaliach, it spells Moshe, Mem, Shin, Hey. And Moshe's name is only mentioned one time where it says, V'ayminu ba'ashem, move Moshe Abdo, that they believed in God by when they split the sea, right? So we sing it in Az Yashir, that they believed in Moshe and Hashem, Moshe's servant. V'ayminu ba'ashem, they believed in Hashem and Moshe's servant. So he's only even mentioned in the context of Hashem, again, making very clear that God is the main main character. What protagonist is only bad, right?
No,
protagonist is good.
Antagonist.
Okay, so the main protagonist of the story, because Hashem, this is really all about God. Okay, yes, we're good on that front. Yes, questions, comments, concerns. You have another one? Okay, good. All right, but again, there are connections between the holidays. So let's see. What are some of the connections? The first one that I thought of is that both are celebrated on the same day on the calendar of their respective months. The 14th of Adar is Purim, and the 14th of Nisan is Pesach. Again, like we said, 30 days apart from each other. In fact, the Gemara Megillah basically says that that when there's a leap year, like this year, that Purim is delayed to the second Adar. That Purim is moved to the second month. When we have a leap year, we add a whole another month inside. Why is that? Because you want to put the two redemptions close to each other. Which two redemptions are they talking about? Purim and Pesach. The idea is that they should be right next to each other. They should be connected. Additionally, the Chachamim say that there should be a learning period of 30 days before the holiday. You should start learning for the holiday, which means that 30 days before Pesach, you should start learning about Pesach, which means that 30 days before is Purim, which means that on Purim, the Chachamim say that you should be learning the halachot, the laws of Pesach. So that's its own connection as it is. Furthermore, many of the events of the Megillah actually happened on Pesach. So, for example, the 13th of Nisan is when Haman cast his famous lots to kill all the Jews just a short while later. And then Esther tells Mordechai that she and also everyone else should fast for 3 days. So the 13th of Nisan was day number one. The 14th of Nisan was day number two, and the 15th of Nisan was day number three. So, that's the day that that's the day that she would that's the day that she would go in, which is Pesach. So she goes in on Pesach to Achashverosh to beg for her people. Also, I said 14th and I meant 15th of the month. Both holidays put an emphasis on giving to the poor, right? How do we give to the poor on Pesach? What's the Pesach connection? Well, you're talking about Maos Chitim. Maos Chitim is an obligation. Nisan, what?
Isn't selling the comments to the goy kind of?
Not exactly. Usually, many people like to do it with wealthy bankers and lawyers because they understand the technical nuances of contracts and acquisitions and all the stuff that we have to do in Judaism. But there is a part in the Seder that we say, "Kol yete v'yechol, kol dich ben yete v'yifsach," that any poor person should be welcome to come at the table, that they should be able to come. Additionally, the laws of Pesach say that if a poor person doesn't have enough needs money, that they should try and get money for the four glasses of wine. And additionally, even though that they're poor, that they should still lean, which is a sign of freedom, despite the fact that they feel like entrenched in their, you know, the fact that they don't have the money for it, but they're still free in the sense of they're not subjugated under another person's rule. And therefore you should do that. And then again, in Purim, we're obligated to give gifts to the poor, matanos levyonim, so that way that they can have their festive Purim meal. It is said that the whole point of Yetzias Mitzrayim is not necessarily just to leave, but the point was for giving of the Torah. So by Shavuos, we basically complete the cycle of Pesach. And on Pesach, it is said, the Chachamim say that the Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, was held above our heads like a vat, where God basically held it over our heads and said, you have to accept the Torah right now, or here is going to be your grave, and I'm going to drop the mountain on you. So we accept the Torah. We don't get a mountain dropped on our heads. However, at Purim, at the very end of it, it says at the end of the Megillah that the Jews accepted and took upon themselves and for their children what they had previously accepted upon themselves. And many of the commentators say that what this is actually talking about is the Torah, that they accept it willingly and lovingly upon themselves, and basically completing this cycle from Matan Torah, completing the cycle from the giving of the Torah at Sinai, completing it all the way back down in whatever year this is. What is it, like 70 C or something? 60 C? 68? Something? Oh, that's Second Temple. You're right. 130, 130 something BC? Yeah. I think 140, whenever it is. So you're a lot of years later. And I don't think it's an accident that the two holidays share like this basic point of trying to get people to care about the poor. Because I think that the idea of these two holidays is that we take everything for life for granted, right? We take our cell phones, our houses, our health, our clothes, our very freedoms in this country to live as equal citizens. Those things can be taken at a moment's notice. Just like the Jews were enslaved in Egypt, it didn't go right away. It really happened in a slow process. And so too, the Jews in Shushan were basically equal citizens, and they thought all was dandy until one day they received a letter that basically all the Jews were going to be basically massacred the next day or much later. But the key is that Hashem holds us in the balance, and we tend to forget it, which is why three times a day in Modim, when we give thanks to God, we say, V'al nisecha, v'al neflotecha, shebechol yom imanu, erev avoker v'tzorayim. Every single day, those are the times that you're supposed to give thanks to God, and it's about the stuff that happens every single day. The fact that you're able to breathe, the fact that you're able to do everything, the fact that you are, you know, the fact that everything works well together. You know, Rabbi Penner, who's the dean of Ritz of the YU Smicha program, said that when he says these words, he takes this deep breath in through his nose and out through his mouth until he can feel it in his lungs. He can feel his heartbeat. And then he gives out his breath as he feels like he's wearing his clothing. He realizes he has a nice place to daven. And he feels like he could properly give thanks to God, because that's the way that you do it. So the question comes up in this week's Parsha. If all the sacrifices were listed in last week's Parsha, why is there one that was left to this week's Parsha, namely that of the Thanksgiving offering, the Korban Todah? So, and additionally, it also opens up Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Tzaves Aaron Vespanav Lemor Zos Torah Sola. Command Aaron and his sons, meaning the Kohanim, you should tell the Kohanim, the priests, This is how to do the Thanksgiving offering. So the question is Thanksgiving offering is for everyone. Why is it only the priests that are being told about the Thanksgiving offering? So what is the Thanksgiving offering being offered for? It's being offered if someone was sick and became healthy, someone traveled through a desert or over a sea and survived, and when someone was released from jail. Basically, whatever someone would say now that would warrant a birchat ha-gomel, the bracha of gomel, which is basically, again, this whole idea of a Thanksgiving offering. So the question is, asked of Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, that doesn't seem like such a miraculous event. Okay, shkoyach, you know, people get sick and they get healthy all the time, Baruch Hashem. People cross over deserts and oceans and seas and airplanes all the time without many problems most of the time. Just don't take Malaysian Airlines. Don't kill me. They're going to find me for this recording. You know, people get out of jail, right? You serve your time. You did what you had to do. You paid your dues, and then you get released. That's it. I mean, unless you're serving life, then you don't. But I'm saying, like, people get out all the time. Like, that's kind of just what happened. So question is, why, again, are you bringing a Thanksgiving offering for these things that, again, seem to be everyday occurrences? So the question I want to pose to you guys to think about is, why is it that we believe that the splitting of the sea was so miraculous? What makes it any more miraculous than opening your fridge and finding it full of food? And Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld basically says that the only difference between the two of them is their frequency. Because when things happen frequently, we tend to forget their miraculous nature. So every time you get on a plane and fly and land safely, it's a miracle. It just happens so often that we forget, right? It's amazing, unbelievable that we can fly over the Atlantic Ocean from here to Europe and land safely, and people do it all the time, right? The people who are like the first ones on airplanes freaked out the first time like it happened, right? It was an amazing feat, the fact that we were able to do it. Fact is, though, we do it all the time. They were like, oh, it's not a big deal. You know, hop on a plane and just, you know, that's it. Again, the things that happen all the time, we tend to forget. The fact that our DNA works as it does to make you, the fact that you can breathe, your heart beats, the fact that everything works together the way it does is just really incredible. So the question, the fact is, because we see things all the time, it happens. So we have an idea called Tchias HaMesim, the revival of the dead that's going to happen in the times of the Messiah. If that happened right now, right, you're looking at the backyard here and all of a sudden people just started sprouting out, I think we would all freak out. Yes? 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 We'd all freak out? Yes. Okay, so right, it would be pretty crazy. However, I think that we actually see a version of this revival of the dead all the time that we just are, again, have just totally forgotten about. And my chavrusa in yeshiva actually said this to me. He said that in reality, we see this every day with trees and plants, because the way that it works is a seed, when you plant it in the ground, the outer layer literally dies, shrivels, goes back to the earth. And then, again, given the right conditions, it will start to produce brand new life and blossom into a tree, potentially even bearing fruit. So imagine if the reverse were true. If the revival of the dead happened all the time, let's say every 6 months, you know, after someone passes away, they would come back to life. At a certain point, we'd just be like, oh, hey, welcome back. Finally, you know, what took you so long? You know, it's about time, you know? Yeah, write a story. I need an author. Where are the Fuchsmans when you need them? Okay, so, right, if you saw it all the time, it would be like, okay, cool, welcome back. But can you imagine if you didn't have, like, trees? Let's just imagine the world could survive without trees. What? The Lorax, yeah. And you're eating an apple, right? Somehow, there's no trees, but there are apples. And you're eating an apple. Hydroponic, I don't know. No, that would also be. Whatever, no trees. And you're eating an apple. And it's like, it's dead, right? The seeds are dead. There's no new life growing just from you holding an apple. And you throw the core on the ground. And then you come back 5 years later, and exactly where you threw it on the ground, a giant apple tree sprouts up. And it's even bearing brand new apple fruit. I think we would freak out. granted, like, it's, again, because we're just not used, because we're used to the opposite, it's just, you know, we would lose our minds. And I think that that's why these commandments, especially for the Thanksgiving offering, was given only to the priests. The reason is because these were the people who saw miracles in the temple every single day. The Kohanim would throw bird innards on the floor and the ground would open up and swallow them. That's pretty miraculous. If you saw it every day, you'd be like, it's nothing special. Like, okay, yeah, the ground opened up. Like, hey, careful where you step. Like, don't step there. You know, the ground's about to open up. You know, there was a pillar of fire that went directly up to the heavens when the things were offered, the offerings were offered. And what happened? No matter the wind, it wouldn't sway. It would be directly straight up, no matter the weather, no matter what. I don't know. You'd have to measure it. Yeah, it says it? I don't think it says it.
It says where.
Yeah, but it doesn't give you a measurement.
No, but if you find out where it is, then you can measure it.
All right, we'll national treasure it. Find it on the back of the Declaration of Independence. Nick Cage is there, yeah. So, right, but when it rained, the Mishnah in Avo says that there was always a fire on the altar, so even when it rained, it wouldn't go out. So, again, when you get used to these types of things, you don't necessarily see them as miraculous, which is why the Kohanim, the priests, are basically told about this, because otherwise they would definitely forget about it.
So, chemical fire.
Sure, chemical fire. Let's say it was raining, typhooning. It was definitely raining hard enough. And I think that's a huge thing. And on our last step of journey of Purim and Pesach, that semi-relates to these types of things, because it has to do with the miracle of both holidays, is Moshe and Esther were both the unlikely heroes of their story. Moshe had this crazy speech impediment, right? And he was commanded to go in front of Paro. He didn't have his parents around, right? His mother put him in a boat, that a small his mother, sister, both put him in a boat down the Nile. Listen. Go watch Charlton Heston's, Ten Commandments, and
listen. In a palace,
correct, but he
kind of was raised to be a leader or something.
Correct, but he didn't have his parents around, and Esther was also an orphan, right? Her parents had died, and she didn't have her parents around, so she was also commanded to go in front of the king, and she was also shy, right? So she also didn't necessarily want to speak up against King Ahasuerus, right? She was worried about going into the palace.
I don't think it was necessarily shyness. It was more just self-preservation.
Self-preservation, yeah. But you could see a comparison between the two, that both were hesitant about going in front of the king and basically asking for the freedom. And the words that we read not too long ago were, Ki ma'acharish tacharishi ba'is azos. If you persist in keeping silent at a time like this, revach v'atzala yamod la'yudim mikama acher, that when the world is overrun with people killing Jews and calling for the destruction of Israel, relief and deliverance will come to the Jews from another place, while you and your father's house will perish. Yes, I'm reading into the Pesukim a little bit. And you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether it's for this time that you were attained your royal position. Maybe it was for this time that you guys were placed in this room to be able to hear this. We don't know why we were placed in each of our positions to be able to hear, to see, to understand. We have to be able to take the words and to understand that we attain our place in life, not just by happenstance. That's really all a product from God. And again, we have to go back to why this whole idea of Thanksgiving, that everything has a reason and a purpose. We can't fall asleep to the miracles of life. And part of that is that we can't rely too much on our own, the things that happen on our own. We have to be able to rely on God. Because if you stay silent now, like, your part of Jewish history might end, whereas the Jews will hopefully continue to go on. So I want you to think about A, how we can see ourselves more in the role of seeing God in the world and seeing ourselves as a product of God in this world, especially the miracles that we take for granted. And on top of it, being able to see how we can use every opportunity, all the opportunities that God has given us, to change the course of world history. Have a great Shabbos.